If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Drop the Needle podcast. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and I'm so happy y'all decided to join us. We have a frequent flyer on the Drop the Needle podcast with us today. We have none other than the no-nonsense intuitive herself, Miss Gail Alexander. Gail, as you may all remember, is the no-nonsense intuitive, mandala creator, spiritual counselor and mentor, healer, and author, which is what we're going to discuss today. It's her new book, and it's titled Wakey Wakey, It's Time, Humanity Pay Attention. Please join me in welcoming Gail Alexander. Hey, Gail.
Hey, Jim. Glad to be back.
Oh, I'm so happy you're back. And boy, have you been busy since we last met. Holy cow.
Yeah, it's not like I get a choice. Everyone's like, why do you put out so much stuff? And I'm directed to do it. And if I don't do it, you know, it just backs up. So it's better if I just do it and move forward and do what they're asking me to do than try and fight against it.
You got to get it out.
That is their current message.
Yes. Get it out there. So I was given the honor of reading the book before it was published and was also honored to have written something for Gail's book. And I had, I have a little summary or a takeaway from Gail's book that I want to share with everyone because it is very cool. Wakey Wakey, It's Time, Humanity Pay Attention, really serves as a spiritual wake-up call for humanity. And it's written in collaboration with Gail's spirit team, her angels, ascended masters, and light beings. The central premise of the book is that humanity is at a critical turning point and must choose between evolving to a higher consciousness or remaining stuck in destructive patterns. So we were talking a little bit earlier and you said, yeah, that's pretty much on point with everything. Now, within the book, though, you have some themes that are really out, well, not out there in the woo-woo out there, right in front of you. And spiritual awakening is one of them. And you bring up a point where you believe that light beings, we as humans, are light beings in human suits, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think that to think that we're not is silly. You know, it's just that we're in three and on a three-dimensional earth and have gravity. So our bodies are much more dense than maybe other beings out there. But part of the shift that's happening right now is our light bodies are coming back online. There's so much talk about chakras and energy work and things like that. That's all about aligning the light body to work cohesively with the physical body.
Okay. Okay. So also in there, you talk about that transition mm-hmm. from the third dimension, and it's like a polarization in mm-hmm. using this comparison of good versus evil to the fifth dimension. So can you explain what that's about?
Well, the third dimension is duality, you know, right versus wrong, good versus bad. The fifth dimension is all about living from your heart space. And a lot of people are having a hard time moving to that because there won't be a lot of secrets left. Because when we move into our heart space, telepathy starts to come back. We're hearing a lot more about that right now. There's all kinds of podcasts about telepathy, you know, and as we move higher up in vibration, all of those gifts start to come back. And it makes people very nervous because it's really hard to control when people are telepathic and can communicate without, you know, picking up a phone or a device or something like that.
Right. And I know that there have been studies conducted by the U.S. government in that specific area with telepathy. And I don't know what it's called when you can move. Is it telekinesis? When mm-hmm. you move things
yeah.
with your mind or the energies that come from that. So, I mean, what we're talking about isn't necessarily new at all, but it's definitely been pushed down quite a bit, right?
Well, I think this year, I don't know about all the people who are listening to your podcast, but this has been a very rough year for people. There's a lot of people transitioning, like a lot of high-powered people transitioning. Yeah. A lot of people have been going through a lot of physical things, a lot of stuff with feet, knees, ankles, moving forward, hips.
Back.
Yeah. You know, so there's so much going on because this is our opportunity to work through it before we shift. We need to release some of it because it's so dense. We can't carry it with us as we go up in levels.
So in that releasing, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds because we're talking about your book.
We always go into the weeds.
I know we do. I know we do. We're going to go where everything leads us. But when let's say that somebody's got some of those physical issues that we're talking about, hip, knee, back, what have you. Do you have any recommendations as it relates to helping that individual release some of those things?
Well, I always think about when people tell me about physical issues, I always think about the chakras and what issues are associated with that part of the body. So let's say like lower back pain is usually for family of origin issues, you know, belief systems that are getting in the way. Like oftentimes for people, it's the belief system of what they were brought up to believe versus what they really believe. And they struggle with the two of those. So they've literally created something where then they stay stuck and can't move or have pain.
That's interesting.
You know, you think about foot pain, knee pain. it's movement forward, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So it's about, you know, how can you move forward? What do you need to let go of to move forward? Why are you keeping yourself? I'm going to use the words playing small, mm-hmm. because that's what so many of us have been conditioned to believe that we need to do, that we need to play small.
Well, because it's safe, right?
But from what?
Well, I mean, it's perception, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really what it boils down to: fear, false evidence appearing real, whatever acronym, you know, you're saying you want to come up with. But that is why. Oh, and it's also what's known too, mm-hmm. right? So if you're playing small and you've done that the majority of your life, it's because that's a pattern in you already. And it's hard to break some of those patterns.
Well, you know, considering I was just working at my day job, which is still doing some counseling things, you know, I was thinking about trauma. And one of the trauma responses that a lot of us have is hypervigilance, and that we're always waiting for something to happen. And when you're always waiting for something to happen, you don't actually see, you're so focused on seeing what's out there that you don't actually see what's right in front of you. And you end up getting smacked. So it's about more learning to be present in the moment so that you can actually make choices and decisions as opposed to what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, what may or may not happen. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that kind of transitions into signs and intuition then too a little bit, which is another key theme throughout the book, where you cover how to recognize and trust spiritual guidance through signs, like angel numbers, synchronicities, mm-hmm. intuitive hunches. And I know that in the book, you share some of your personal experiences and precognitive.
Is that where I talk about my Jeep?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, including sensing your mechanical problems with your vehicle. So that's very cool. Why don't you tell us that story?
So my Jeep was leaking, and I took it in, and the dealership spent about an hour. They're like, we'll have it back. You don't need a rental car. We'll put you back in it. Everything's fine. So they put me back in the Jeep. Now, I've only had this car less than 2 years. It's not this Jeep less than 2 years. And so I get home, and me being who I am, I get up, I go upstairs, I get a piece of cardboard, put it under my, because there's already a pile of oil on the ground, so I wouldn't know if it was new, and go back down like an hour and a half later, still leaking. Mm. So I take it back, and I'm like, you didn't fix it. And they're like, yes, we did. This is just extra runoff. I'm like, no, you didn't. You want to fix it this time? And so the next day I get a phone call saying, yeah, there's a crack in the oil pan, but being we can't get parts right now because of all the fun things going on in our country, you know, it was going to take a week and a half. And they had left me an offer to, you know, trade in my car. And like I said, I still owed quite a bit on it. I'm like, it doesn't make sense to do that. But they made me a deal that I couldn't, you know, walk away from. So I ended up with a new Jeep.
That is something.
Because I would have never, the part I'm missing is they said they're going to tell you that they fixed it, but they're not going to have fixed it. You will never be safe in that vehicle again.
Excellent. Because you beat me to the bring you back to, because I knew this from when it actually happened. Because Gail and I are friends and we talk regularly. And I remember her saying that, and she's like, I don't know if this is a good time or not, but they're telling me that I'm just not going to be safe in this vehicle. And I said, well, I asked the question, have those voices ever been wrong before? And you just said, no. And I was like, well, okay. I don't think there's going to be a first time with this. And sure enough, there it was. And she got her new Jeep, which is.
Well, and the funny thing is then 3 weeks later, I get a notification saying your Jeep is in for service. I'm like, no, it's not. It's sitting in the garage downstairs. And they're like, the old Jeep, 3 weeks later, they finally got the part. And they said they finally fixed it, supposedly.
Well, yeah, well, good for the new owner. Yeah, I'm happy for them. One of the, and this also kind of ties into your personal journeys where, and this is really cool. And I'm not trying to give everything away from the book, but folks, you got to get this book too. And why don't you talk about your multidimensional travel as a child? Okay.
So as a child, I had a white pedal car. And I thought that that's how I multidimensionally traveled, because it would happen a lot while I was in, you know, pedaling around, because it was monotonous. So that was when I would be traveling. And then the little boy down the street kept stealing my pedal car and leaving me his fire engine. And I would panic.
As collateral.
Because I'm like, he doesn't know how to use it. He's not going to know how to come back. And so my parents would go down and get my pedal car back and bring him back his fire truck. But yeah, that's how, as a little kid, that's how I thought I multidimensionally traveled. I didn't realize it was me. I thought it was the white pedal car.
Well, of course. Why would you think it was you? You're like, it's got to be this special car, right? It's going to get you where you need to go. I love that, by the way. I had mentioned earlier when she uses her spirit team, that's really what ends up happening when Gail writes. And that's when she says, I don't have much control over it, because the spirit team comes a knocking. And it's like, it doesn't matter what time, it's like, hey, we need you to start writing this down. And she goes. So I remember hearing about that, and I was like,
you mean when they told me I had 3 weeks to write the book?
Exactly. And you did. So that's another amazing thing. I had mentioned also in the little synopsis that you talk about really this rapid technological advancement without the corresponding consciousness that comes with it, that could really lead to humanity losing its heart connection. What are the consequences when that happens?
Civilizations can end. We think about Atlantis, and you know, part of the reason that Atlantis destructed was because it lost its heart connection and was just power hungry and was misusing all of the things that they created and all the gifts that they had had, and they ended up destroying their civilization. So
that's well, that's a warning we should really heed.
Are we going to destroy our civilization? Probably not. I think we're past that point, but we might throw ourselves back quite a bit from where we could actually be. That's the choice.
Yeah, and with that, sometimes, I don't know if you've ever thought this way, but it'd be nice to go back to the late 1980s, when we really didn't have cell phones and we didn't have the distraction and we didn't have this constant deluge of information coming at us 24 hours a day, where it's actually impacting the brain function and wiring, if for a lack of a better term, of adolescent brains, because of the constant, what is it called, doom scrolling. It's can't pay attention, can't pay attention, can't pay attention. And it's, I think it'd be nice. I wonder how many car accidents or how many fewer car accidents would occur without having the phone.
Yeah, I think it's illegal now, at least in the United States, to use your phone while driving.
Oh, sure. Illegal.
Not saying that people don't. But.
Oh, no. One of the other things that comes out in your book is the practical guidance piece. And what I mean by that is, in Gail's book, there are three guided meditations for healing. And you discuss the importance of spiritual practice and address how to work through fear, relationships, personal growth, all from a soul perspective or spiritual perspective. And I know that there was one of the meditations that you wanted to discuss. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about that one?
Well, you know, I've written, most of my books have meditations in them. That's not new for me. So the first one in this book is the adrenal one to help calm us down a little bit. And then there's a rainbow flame meditation, which is really cool as well. But the one that I was really surprised that they had me put in the book was you go into a healing pyramid and you levitate in the meditation. And I didn't think that they would ever, you know, want us to talk about all the healing work that went on in the pyramids and stuff like that. So I was very surprised when they put that in this book. So
I wonder why, unless your guides or your team decided we got to pull out the heavier artillery for something like this, because the course we're on could be, I don't want to say, you know, it sounds dramatic to say cataclysmic, but maybe I, you know what, if what you're talking about with the potential of some of these things is pretty significant. So I'm sure there was a definite reason for that coming out. Right.
And it's fun to levitate. So.
Yeah. You know, I'm usually one for doing that in my dreams, and being able to, when you get into the practice of meditation, it is almost, I think your brain does get to that dream too, which makes complete sense as to why you would be able to do that in your meditation. And that's really
cool. I have done it with a group of people. It was a lot of fun. You know.
Oh, that's right. You did. Did you do that one on one of the?
I did it on one of the social clubs with Jen Weigel. Right. Yeah, where I had everyone levitate in the middle of it. Yeah.
I'm sure that was well received.
Yeah, and then so we tried to talk about it afterwards, but no one was in a place to talk.
Oh, yeah. Well, I missed that one, and I would have liked to have done that, because you know me, there's. I couldn't be, holy shit. When something happens, I react, and there's no filter or brakes on it. It just comes out. So,
I wanted to go back to, you were talking about, you know, everyone's so busy in their life with all these devices and things like that. They keep our brains always active. That's why meditation, guided imagery, music, you're seeing like sound baths. All of that is to get us to connect to the inner rhythms within ourselves, because we need to remember those if we're going to be happy, healthy, and whole.
That's a good point.
The three H's, happy, healthy, and whole. Well, I guess whole is with a W, but yeah.
No, I thank you for going back to that, because that is important to note, that the calming of the mind. And it's not like you can ever completely shut it off, but you can get a lot of distractions tucked away nicely for a period of time that open up for some really good things. You talked about the collective.
Oh yeah.
So let's spend a little time discussing the collective.
Okay, so the collective, as you said, that came through when I wrote this book was angels, archangels, ascended masters, and light beings. So at the beginning of each section of the book, there's a channeled message from the collective. So I thought I would read the one that's in the preface.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Because I got a copy of the book before it came out. So it says, to humanity, there's much love available. With that said, you as humans block the magnificence of this frequency because of the power and possibility this frequency holds. Love is capable of transforming. It is time for all of you to remember the love, light, and power that you all carry. It is time for you each to be who you are fully meant to be your own Power Ranger. You have more support than you can fathom. Go forth, live, laugh, love, and experience connection, joy, and the beauty and gift of being incarnated. We know it does not feel like a gift, and yet each breath, each moment of connection is exactly that, a gift. Time to open your presence in the present. Good journey. We, the collective, are always here for you, sending peace, grace, blessings, and love.
Your collective is quite clever. Quite a group of wordsmiths there. I'm really curious, though, if you are even able to do this, but can you describe what the communication experience is like for you from the collective? And how do you distinguish your own thoughts from your spiritual team's thoughts?
So it depends on who I'm channeling. They all come in a little bit differently. Like, we've talked before that Metatron is one of my main guides. And when he comes in, he's very pushy. Mm-hmm. He's the one who tells me I have to do mandalas at certain times and kind of the colors that they're going to be and things like that. The collective was a little bit more gentle, which threw my rhythm for the book off. Because, you know, they weren't as demanding other than telling me it was going to be 3 weeks, you know, that it was going to take me. But it was a much softer approach. And my last book, I actually wrote typing it. This one I had to handwrite again. The information came in through handwritten versus me sitting at my computer typing. And as I talked about before, they still don't like the keyboard for my iMac, so they always make me write on a laptop. They like the feel of the keyboard better.
I'm curious to know, well, they probably don't tell you why, but that just...
I write faster than I type.
Oh, do you? Okay.
And yeah. I don't think when I'm writing. Sometimes I'll think while I'm typing or I'm looking at the screen to see what it looks like as I'm typing. So sometimes I'll stop. When I'm writing, I won't stop until it's done.
Okay, so that makes sense, because then it's flowing out and don't have an opportunity to think about what you're putting on the
or page. Punctuation or things
right,
like that.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, that doesn't sound right. No, that's exactly what I heard. So just say it. Yeah, I could see going back and forth on that. I know I would. Mm-hmm. And I want to hop back to the multidimensional travel as a child using your white pedal car, which is cool.
Yep. I also had my first experience. I don't know if I talked about it in this book. I know I've talked about it. My first experience by locating, I was at camp. So I was like 11 or 12. So
okay, you opened that door.
Okay, so I was at camp. It was overnight camp, so I was there for 4 weeks, and I remember standing in what they were calling like the cantina or store. Mm-hmm. And I was out on the like balcony of it, and then the next thing I knew, I was playing with my friends at home. And then someone called my name and I was jerked back to the camp.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I know you did not mention that. And that would be freaky for sure. But, you know, depending upon your age and how many times that's happened to you, it may not be anything new. But
that was the first time that I remember it ever happening, and it didn't happen again for years because it kind of freaked me out.
I could see that. Yeah. It's like that Leaper. Isn't there a movie called Leaper or something like that, or Jumper, where they're doing the jumps back and forth? So the reason I brought up the question about the multidimensional travel as a child was really more to give you an opportunity, if you feel comfortable doing this, maybe giving some of the parents out there, let's say that their child is experiencing a similar phenomenon, what advice might you give them in understanding where this is coming from with their kids?
Well, I think a couple things are true. When I was little, a long time ago in the dark ages, a lot of the information that was not available back then. So like if I had told my parents that this stuff was happening, I'm sure I would have been sent somewhere. You know, parents are more, kids know more now. They come back with more gifts. Like you hear lots of little kids talking about past lives and things like that, or telling their parents, I was here before and I was blah, blah, blah. I think right. For parents, it's just staying open, whether it's imagination, whether it really happened. It's just staying open to it and let your kid talk about what they need to talk about, unless it's putting them in danger. Mm-hmm. And then you need to do something, like if they're having commands to do things that are not in everyone's best good, then you need right. to act on it.
Step in, yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
That's a therapist part of myself. But mm-hmm. for the most part, it's kids. Until kids go to school, they're still very connected to the other side. Mm. Once we go to school and start conditioning kids to learn and things like that, they start to lose their connection to everything on the other side. At least that's what happened when I was growing up. I don't think that happens as much now, because people are more open to talking about it.
Right. That restrictive reasoning where color in the lines, no, the sky can't be green or mm-hmm. something like that. And that's one of those things that fortunately I always got a kick out of my boys coloring and doing mm-hmm. whatever. You know, I was never a parent that was just like, nope, it's got to be this, or nope, it's got to be that. I didn't much care. I just enjoyed watching him, you know, color in a color. My youngest would say he was drawing, because he would draw and color at the same time. So it was a cool little word he made up. But you're right about that. And I do recall looking back a couple of times where my kids were very insistent that we'd been someplace before that we hadn't. Have we been here? You know, they'd ask, and I said, no, this is the first time. Are you sure this is? I think we've been here before. No, this is the first time, bud. You know, one of those.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, right, right. And so, you know, I guess it's easy to, you know, hindsight's 20/20, right? Mm-hmm. And from the vantage point that we're in right now, going back there, you could say, oh, yeah, well, I get it. Yeah. Well, maybe you were here before. Tell me more about it, you know, and instead of, you know, moving on so quickly, mm-hmm. opening it up for further discussion and just kind of feel things out. So, yeah. So I've got a few more questions and then we'll get to the musical things. But this is really kind of interesting. You know, when you were talking about the mechanical issues with the Jeep and mm-hmm. wasn't actually fixed despite what the dealership said, for people who struggle to trust their intuitive hunches, how can they begin to distinguish between fear-based thinking and genuine intuitive guidance? That seems like a perfect place to end part one of episode 41 with the no-nonsense intuitive Gail Alexander. But before we wrap up today's conversation, I just want to say how powerful and eye-opening this episode has been. From Gail's first experience with multidimensional travel to her collective, waking her up in the middle of the night to get started on her book. We've covered a lot of ground, but guess what? We're just getting started. In part two of this conversation, we dive even deeper. You'll hear some wild and thought-provoking stories from Gail's concerns about technology's impact on human consciousness and connection, to how Gail channels messages from spiritual beings, emphasizing that this is humanity's moment to choose transformation over destruction, love over fear, and heart-centered living over ego-driven existence. So be sure to come back for the next episode. You're not going to want to miss what's coming up next. Until then, keep your heart open and your playlist loud. See you in part two.
COTA just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your COTA fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with COTA. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at pluralsight.com and see for yourself.